Well, almost every church I talk to is using YouTube to reach more people and post their sermons online, but they're making a few mistakes, and I wanted to go over some of the things that your church can do to, I believe, double the amount of traffic that you're getting on YouTube. Let's talk about it.
You're listening to the Reach Right Podcast, the show dedicated to helping your church reach more people and grow.
Well, hey guys, I'm Thomas.
And I'm Ian.
And today is another one of our famous mailbag episodes where we take your comments and we dig in a little bit on them. Some of the ones that our production team here found were the most useful or interesting from YouTube this time around here. And we're going to try our best to give you some of our answers and feedback. Really good ones this time, I felt like. There's things that we just can't cover in every single video. And so digging into some of this is always fun.
Yeah, good ones. Always a funny one or two. We love those too. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so leave us your comments, guys, on videos like these. If you ever have something that you're wondering what our take is on this, or it's something you're wrestling with at your church, we do our best to answer every comment. Like, we'll text answer all of them on YouTube. But if they are something that we think other people are asking, or maybe we're hearing a lot of it, we'll actually do a video like this and put it into a mailbag episode and maybe even do some other videos on it. So I will say our comments are where we get a lot of our overall content ideas on things that we should be making future podcast episodes or full-length videos about. So thanks for being a part of the Reach Right family.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, should we kick it off, Thomas? And we can start reading some of these. So our first one here was from Nemby Samuel. I probably said that wrong. I think I said it for the most part. And they quite simply said, help me to grow up on YouTube. Now, this was based on, you know, how churches are growing on YouTube. It was a post we put out on that. Some content on that. So basically it sounds like this is a person that's new at using it for our church, which there's still a ton of churches that YouTube has been foreign to, and they're just now kind of getting into that. Maybe they just now started doing more video content. So we still love this question. Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. All right, let me take a swing at it here. I have a few ideas on what you should do if you're just getting started on YouTube. And I think that even if you're not, a lot of churches don't do these things. And so if you just do these few things, you'll have a huge leg up. And I suspect you could probably double your number of views and watch time just by making these few tiny little things that shouldn't take you very long. So there's the obvious stuff I'd say is just be consistent, always post at the same times, same days. So typically that's going to be Sunday afternoon or Monday morning, whenever you can get your video up there. One thing that I would say, here's one kind of quick win, is trim your sermons. Trim your YouTube videos to be just your sermons. I see this mistake all the time where a church will leave their entire service on the YouTube channel. And I get the kind of temptation to do this. I understand why we want to do it. It's because obviously we believe that worship is just as important in a church service as the sermon portion. And so you want to keep these pieces together. And then, you know, usually announcements falls between there. And so you just leave it as one big file. But here's the problem. On YouTube, people vote with their little slider dial in what they watch. And so when somebody gets on to a YouTube video, and if you are using your entire service, the retention chart you can see a couple of days after you upload the video will almost always, without fail, show this pattern. People will get on to the video, they will watch for a second, and it'll immediately drop down to about a 10% retention rate. And then it'll be that way all the way through worship, through the announcements, and then right when the sermon starts, it'll pick up again back up to 40% or something like that. This is true for my church when we've done this before. It's true for every church that I've looked at. It looks something like this, right? The percentages may change, but there's a huge drop off because what people are looking for on YouTube and what is actually unique content is the sermon portion. That's not to say that your worship is not good enough or that it's something that's not valuable. All of that can be true. If you feel inspired to do that, maybe set up a separate channel for your church's worship music, just that part. That's fine. I'm not against that. But what this does, the reason why it's important to kind of trim this down is because It is a signal to YouTube every time someone clicks over a portion of your video, it tells YouTube, this is not valuable. People right. seem to like a part of this video, but they don't like the entire first half of it. So yeah. that's a signal for them to show this video to fewer people. And so yep. by including your worship and by including your announcements and by including your prayer out at the end and every other element of your service, what you're doing is overall, you're making yeah. fewer people see your content.
Yeah.
So less people will see it, less people will see the gospel if you hear the gospel if you don't trim it down to just the sermon portion, which is yep. what people are looking for. So feel yeah. free to put, you know, your announcements and your worship in other videos. You could put them on different playlists. I'd recommend probably a different channel if you're really insistent on this, but make sure you trim it down. So that's one thing. I'd also say this. I think that the big mistake so many churches make is they're not titling their YouTube videos correctly. So yeah. they'll use titles that are more churchy and not something that's searchy. So
yeah.
make that leap. You can still have your church title. So here's an example. Like, I'm sure I've seen hundreds of church messages, sermons that are called something like Faith Over Fear, right? That's a yeah. perfectly good title for a Sunday morning message that you would share with your congregation. But it's an extraordinarily bad title for YouTube because nobody is looking for Faith Over Fear. That's not a topic that people are searching right. for. What people might be searching for is, how do I overcome fear? Or how does yeah. Jesus help me overcome fear? Those kinds of titles, how-to yeah. titles, they will always get better search results. So yeah. just doing something like that will make a huge difference. If you're struggling, ask ChatGPT or Claude to give you some ideas for better titles for your sermon yeah. and give it the context of what you preached about or your transcript. That's a good solution too. So those couple of things, like consistency, trimming your sermons, and then getting your titles right.
Yeah,
I honestly believe that at least doubles your views. That's not even an exaggeration. I think that really moves the needle that much. Not with people in your church, but just with YouTube recommending your content to more people.
Yeah, which is what you want, especially if you yeah. want more people to see you and potentially more visitors and people following you. So, no, that's good stuff, Thomas. And I think too, like, I just would say one more thing when it came to what you said about like not including the worship, or, you know, that people will be viewing, at least not including the whole service all at once with the worship. We've seen that for years, even before YouTube was a big thing, right? People yeah. or where if they missed a sermon, they wanted to get the message, or if they were new to a church, yeah, they want to know a feel for the worship. Doesn't mean they're looking to worship from their living room or their office or from their phone or whatever.
Sure, yeah.
They want to get a feel for the preaching. So there's been a lot of factors and reasons for this, but you're right. The proof's in the data from YouTube, right? So yeah. you could see how people watch. So there you go. But well, good. This next one will be fun. This one here is, and we get these often, and we get it. You know, it's a concern yeah. out there. This one's from Hervin Say. And I'm just going to read this because it's got quite a bit in here. They ask, why don't you pray about it? And by the way, this was in response to content we put out there in a video we put out, where should churches draw the line, the AI line, right? Okay, so important to reference that. They say, why don't you pray about it and ask God to reveal what you could have added more? Do we believe in the Holy Spirit anymore to resort back to ChatGPT for answers that should come from God? Even ask a fellow pastor to bring constructive criticism to your sermons instead, I guess is what they were saying. AI in the church is really dangerous because for some people, it's going to remove the need to pray or ask God directly, thus removing the dependency that only God knows best. And also, it's an attack on fellowship. If people resort back to ChatGPT to ask questions, they could ask their pastor or brother and sister in Christ, or community is probably no longer needed, or those things that are commanded in Scripture is what they had a big concern with. So,
yeah, that's yeah. good. Okay, so I want to just start by saying this. I get the sentiment. I understand yeah. That a lot of the things that this person said are true, like that. I believe that a lot of this stuff is going to happen, that as AI rises, people will like be inclined to less fellowship. And mm-hmm. as AI rises, it'll become a crutch, and there's going to be brain rot that happens because we don't rely on our own thinking skills and we use AI to think yeah. for us in some cases. And all of these things are true. But like, it's true whether we are participating in it or not. Like, so it's like, I can tell you this, that like my view is that AI is happening. And we can be the voice crying in the wilderness and saying, you know, stop, let's not use AI. It's not the way that we want to go as humanity.
Yeah.
And that could be like, that's a valid position, but it's a losing position at the same
yeah.
time. So the rise of AI and the fact that it's coming is inevitable. It will become completely ubiquitous. It's going to be something that's part of our everyday life. And here's the kind of reality is that you can't leave a comment on YouTube without using AI. This video was recommended to this person by AI. It was a short yeah. form video that we did, and the algorithm is completely AI driven. And so yeah. everything we touch today is already driven by AI, and it'll be so much more so in the future. So
yeah.
what the question that's better for us right now as pastors and church leaders is, how do we shepherd our people in a world that will be dominated by AI? Because think about this too. There's coming a time, like right now we're in this time where AI is as smart as, or close to as smart as some of our smartest people in every area.
Yeah.
Soon we're gonna get to this season of artificial general intelligence, which means like that AI is as smart as everybody in the world combined.
Yeah.
And we're going to get to a place where AI is smarter, like super intelligence, where it's smarter than all of the people in the world combined. Like it's way smarter yeah. and knows more and learns its own things and that kind of stuff. So there's a coming time where this is the case. Our choice is one of two things. We can take this approach that he's talking about, is just churches don't touch AI. We have nothing to do with it. We just speak about its evils and we don't play any part in it. And I think that's the same decision that the Amish were left with 150 years ago when it came to electricity.
yeah.
They said, this is yeah. evil. We don't want these modern things. It's going to yeah. take away from the way we live our lives. Let's rebuke and move away from it. And meanwhile, the entire world passes them by. Or we can speak to it. We can lead the discussion on it. We can present our theology on it. We can coach people. Because I think out of this is going to rise an enormous human need. There's going to be enormous need for people for real human connection. This is the one thing that AI is going to try to do, and there's going to be substitutes for human connection. There already are people that yeah. are falling in love with chatbots, and there's going yeah. to be all kinds of crazy things of that.
Yeah.
I don't want to use language that will get us demonetized yep. or get us kind of shut down on YouTube, but
right.
there will be things that drive wedges between husbands and wives, and intimacy yeah. will be yeah. between robots and humans and AI yeah. and that stuff. So that's all yeah. coming. People, the church, this is our time to shine. I think that yeah. this is, the church is in the perfect place to offer something that is real, offer something that is spiritual in a world that where everything is completely digital and completely AI driven. So I think it's yeah. a big opportunity. My take is, let's not bury our heads in the sand, but let's be leaders in this area.
Yeah.
And yeah, with the right kind of guardrails. Like, that's why we asked that question about the AI line. Let's have the right guardrails. We don't want to substitute AI for the Holy Spirit under any circumstances.
Right. No.
But we can't ignore it at the same time. So that's my take on that.
No, you mentioned a lot there, Thomas. I don't have a whole lot to add there. The only thing I thought of when I was reading part of that that response was just also, yes, people are already and will continue to rely on asking questions from AI or ChatGPT or whoever, whatever app solution or whatever AI solution they use. That doesn't mean they still don't pray about it. You know, that doesn't mean that they still don't talk to their pastor about it. That still doesn't mean, even though you get, you know, what have we known for years? You may get advice from three things that sound like good advice, but it's not something that God is leading you to. You still got to pray about it. So, you know, there's still ways to, of course, apply your relationship to the Lord with it. So, yeah, good response there, Thomas. So next one, a little bit different. We got from D Green 3209. How does your church handle prayer requests? Simple question. So, we were kind of just talking about church tech in general when it came to this question. So, but this has changed a little bit. We've seen on a lot of church websites, we've just seen some different things. I've seen prayer chat feature type, you know, where you have the chat feature on a site and grounding prayer requests often. Yeah. And so it's changed.
Yeah. All right. So I'm going to answer this question two ways. Number one, the literal answer, how does my church handle prayer requests? I'm going to say poorly, is how we handle prayer requests. How will we be handling prayer requests? This is something that we're in the middle of rediscovering. This question came from our review of my church's church tech stack. So we outlined all the different things that we use technology-wise at our church, and I'll leave a link to that here. So if you want to check out that video, it was wildly popular. So people were really interested in what we were spending, and I think that really threw a lot of people for a loop, how much money we spend on software, but we still think it's worth it. So check that out.
Yeah.
So what we're going to do, let me say, right now we have a terrible thing where people hear a prayer request and then we email each other and we have an email chain. And when there is a serious prayer request, everybody types praying. And so I usually have a list of 38 different people that write that they're praying on things. And I'm thankful for that, but it is something that is probably not helpful to me as a pastor at this church. And I do love the chorus of other people praying, but like getting those notifications all the time, letting me know that everybody is praying, it's not actually helpful, especially for a church our size.
Yeah.
What we will do, and what I'm working with our administrator team right now on, is building out a system through Planning Center to do it. So I don't think that I haven't found, and maybe if you guys have one out there that you use that you love, I haven't found a dedicated piece of software that's helpful for us that would work for us for just managing prayer requests. So yeah. I think usually it's going to be using some other tool that you have. And I think for most churches that use Planning Center, which is so many of us, that is probably the best choice. And the way we're going to do it is we're going to have a Planning Center form that's going to be tied to a note in Planning Center people that then will have a notification tied to it that whenever a prayer note gets added, it will then distribute that to everybody that's on our prayer list. I think we can set it up. This is the part where we're still working through is we know we can set it up as a daily roundup of all the prayer requests. So once a day we'll get, you know, here's the four prayer requests that came in. I don't know if there's like an urgent marker we could use just yet where we can like, if something like needs prayer now because someone just went to the hospital or something like that, that it would immediately notify people. So we're playing with some of those things still too. I hope to report back and maybe we'll do a video on that topic by itself on the best ways to handle prayer requests in your church. Cause that's something I get a lot. We had several other people that asked a question like this, but that's what we're going to do. But for now, how do we handle it? I say not well.
Yeah. Okay, good. Yeah. Well, that takes care of that. I don't have any answers as far as how my church does it either. Or as far as a solid answer to that. So this next one I like because this is something that I've just, you know, this has been a topic that's come up for years now whenever I'm consulting with churches. But we got a question from Clutter-Free Carly, like the name there over YouTube. But and this was basically how to do church announcements that don't suck. That was the video we put out, right? So, and so she says, this was so helpful. Can you tell me how you are getting the other announcements / upcoming events that don't make the cut in people's hands? We were tossing around the church bulletin idea, but that seems like such a thing of the past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. If I had my way completely, I wouldn't have a church bulletin at my church. But old habits die hard, and we still do a church bulletin. And we have, you know, it's kind of a digital meets physical. There's QR codes on the back that people scan to sign up for things and that kind of stuff. But your church does not do a bulletin. Is that right, Ian?
No.
No. Okay. Yeah. I think
really missed something. No, I don't believe so at all. Yeah.
Yeah. You've missed on your entry every single week for the last several years.
No. We'll put out some things kind of like that seasonally, but not like every, not a monthly thing.
So here's a few ideas. Like I've seen some churches wrestle with this, but I think you need to hold strong. You'll get some pushback on, you know, why can't we have an announcement for this particular group every single week, because it happens every week. There's always going to be people wanting to vie for stage time on these things. Stay strong on it. And your question is really great. Number one, I think a bulletin is an idea. If not, I think I've seen churches do really well with doing a regular, like, what's happening handout. So maybe it's quarterly, maybe it's monthly, but there's kind of like a guide of all the different things that people can get signed up for, jump in on, those things that people could receive there on Sunday physically. Obviously, the church website, you want to train your people to be comfortable and used to going there to looking for these kinds of events. The biggest opportunity is on your church email and things that you send out there. So now I have basically the same standard as on announcements as I do on our general church email. So again, from this video, what we talked about, I'll leave a link to that video up here too. You do not want to include something in a church announcement unless it affects 50% or more of the audience you're speaking to. So that, and you know, sometimes that includes like men's women's ministries and women's ministries and youth ministries, because even if you are not a man, you may be married to a man who should be going to a men's ministry event or those things. So those are things that are okay. But if it's smaller than that, if it's, you know, at our church, we have a group, love these people, and they do a great job where they help people that have loved ones with mental health issues. It's a small group that meets together, valuable, love what they do. But it's something where we don't announce that. Maybe once a year we'll kind of make an announcement just to let people know it's a ministry that we offer. But it's not something that we you know, do every time before they meet. Yeah. So what's best is I have the same rule again in my email, is that our general emails are for 50% or greater reach. But you should have segments of your church list that segments people by different kind of ages or interests or needs or those kinds of things. So like in Planning Center, you can do this where people can be tagged with youth or men's or women's or different serve teams that they serve on. Yeah, all those kinds of things. And then you can pinpoint whether, like, what emails and what communications they would get. So to those people, I would send a different message. So maybe you've built a list of people in our case that have loved ones with mental health challenges. So maybe there's a few dozen people that are on that list at our church. And when those events come out, they get an email about what they need to know about that specific event there. So is it perfect? No. Is it as easy to get people on board and educate them on this? Probably not. But I still think the trade-offs are worse. And I think that's why we kind of lean to it that way. So I really do like that handout kind of quarterly idea that lists all the different ministries and all the different events that are coming. Yeah. So that's something I would probably lean into as well.
But not something every week or anything, of course. Right. So that is pretty dated now. So as far as a practice. So this last question, not least, was in response to our content we put out there, or the title of this YouTube video was Google Killed Their 10K Ad Grant. So a very strong title that obviously probably warranted these types of requests. But this person asked, CVOS1, do you offer consulting on getting Google ad grants? And more importantly, they asked, is the ad grant program still worth it?
Okay, so good question. So this video, we chose a strong title because this is something we hear from people all the time. They'll type in like just that, you know, Google is like the ad grant is done. Like it just doesn't work anymore. It's killed, all that kind of stuff. So the theme of the video was, to someone who is kind of new to this, it might feel like the ad grant, it's done. It doesn't work anymore.
Right.
It's not true. The ad grant is still an opportunity that's out there. But I will say categorically, it is harder than it's ever been to spend Google's money and to actually spend it on things that are valuable. And for us as churches, this is getting people to walk through our doors and introducing them to our ministries and teaching them about our church, right? So to that end, like, is it still worth it to do the Google ad grant? If you have the time or you want to hire somebody like ReachRight to do it for you, yes. If you like just claiming the grant, like that gets you literally is totally not worth anybody's time.
No.
Like, and even just claiming it and, you know, using
setting
ChatGPT,
up a few ads or whatever.
Like, that's just, you'll probably spend like $50 for the first month, and then it'll dwindle to nothing after a couple of months, unless you're actively managing this and really working on it. So our successful campaigns are being edited monthly. They have thousands of keywords that they target. They have dozens, if not hundreds, of ads, if they've been with us for a while, that produce thousands of clicks is the way we do it when we're really after a while and it's kind of snowballed to that place there. So does it still work? Yes. Do these ads drive people to churches? Yes. I see people that come to my church and they write in there, it's so weird, I saw you on a Google ad. And like they'll write those kinds of things on our connection card. So I know it anecdotally, and we hear it and we see it from our clients all the time. We spend hundreds of thousands of dollars of Google's money every single month for our clients. We've spent several million dollars over the course of the last few years of Google's money. So we do know that it works, but I don't blame you for thinking this. It is harder than it's ever been before. So to the question, we'd be happy to chat with you on that. Even kind of just point you in the right direction. We'd love to help you if you want to hire us to do it for your church. But even if you just want to learn more about it, we're happy to talk. And we have dozens of videos we've done that show you exactly what we do here at ReachRight. We don't have any like secret sauce that we don't put in our videos so that you'll buy our services. It really is just that we know this stuff. We want to educate pastors and church leaders on how to do it. Chances are it's going to be something you don't have the time to put into. And in that case, we hope that you would hire us to help you do it. So if that's you, I'll leave a link to some of that info up here or down in the description if you want to learn more about our services there. So not dead yet, but it is challenging.
It's definitely challenging. Yep, for sure. But no, we still, I'll say one more thing to that. You know, it reminded me, we do have a church, and without naming them and everything, and there's a lot of factors that go into the success of the Google grant. So we're not going to get into all that. Real quick comment. We have a smaller church. They're, I think, around a little over 100 now in a very rural area where there's not as many people doing Google search, and they only spend a small portion of the 10,000, but it still equals like a couple of visitors a week for them, and they're ecstatic, you know? So it does work, and it can even work for a small rural church, and because a lot of those churches just don't think things like that can work. It's not true. I mean, in most churches, you know, one visitor a week means a lot.
Totally.
So it should.
It's a huge difference.
You know, what's a soul worth, right? So there you go. But
that's so helpful to hear you. And I just, you know, so the fact is that it works better in big cities than it does in rural areas. And like here in Hawaii, it's one of those, well, not a rural area. I live in Honolulu, which is a big city if you haven't, for those who haven't been here before. But there's a limited reach because there's only so many people on this island and people aren't coming from other islands to my church.
Yeah.
So we have some disadvantages, but it's still worth it for us. You know, are we able to spend all $10,000 of Google's money in a limited area like this? No. But it is still something that's probably pretty valuable for most churches. So if you want some help on that, drop us a line. We'd be happy to chat and see how we can help your church.
Yep,
anything else to add, Ian?
No, good stuff.
Good. Thanks for your questions, guys. We appreciate them.
Yep.
Leave some comments down below. Maybe we'll put them in the next episode, our next mailbag episode. Thanks for being part of the ReachRight family, and we'll see you next time.
See ya.